Meeting will come to order. Good morning. The Customer Service Operations Safety Committee for April 23rd. Agenda has been previously distributed. Are there any changes, additions, corrections? Hearing none, if there's unanimous consent, we'll accept the agenda as presented. No objection. Agenda is approved. The minutes of the March 26th meeting have also been distributed, although I seem not to have them. Pretty sure I saw them in the early distribution. Yeah, I definitely have the distribution. Oh, there they are. Yeah, there.
Might be useful to put in the numbers here. Technology will do something.
All right. So we have the minutes of the March 26th meeting. Mr. Benjamin notes that the minutes do not include the other two members who were named to the committee. So they are Mr. Gene Cola and Mr. Benjamin, and I'll ask that the minutes be amended to include that information. If there's no objection, the minutes are will be amended accordingly. We don't actually have a motion, but it's the let me test. Is there a motion to approve the minutes with that amendment?
So moved.
Is there a second? Any further discussion on the minutes? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The minutes are approved as amended. And on to operational performance. Good morning, Mr. Cato. Good morning, Mr. Francis.
Good morning, Zimmerman.
Good morning, Mr. Zimmerman, members of the committee. On-time performance for the month of February for bus is still in the mid, a little slightly up in the 70s. Next slide. Mean distance between ferry for the month of February was at 65.42, which is a little bit above the goal that we set. The fleet with the CNG, hybrid, and diesels all met their goals. The clean diesel was slightly down, and that was due to some door and engine problems that we had with vehicles, with the buses. Next slide. On-time performance for rail is at 95%. Next slide. Our rail car door malfunctions for the month out of the 5,000 plus trains that operated that month, 1.9% of them resulted in door failures, and less than 1% resulted in offloads. And during the non-peak period, next slide. Non-peak period out of the 2,730 trains we ran, less than 1% again resulted in offloads. Next slide. Our escalator system availability for February was 91%, and for the elevators was 98%. The top 12 escalators with the lowest availability for the past, you see, are listed here. Some of them have been repaired. I know the Columbia Heights escalator had been out of service for a while, but that is back in service now. Same with Foggy Bottom, and I want to say that we took an opportunity to go up to Foggy Bottom and still evaluating those escalators for future work in the future, future work to be needed on those escalators in the future. Next slide. Elevators, the top 12 elevators for lowest reliability are listed. As you can see, some of the repeaters are Pentagon, Deanwood, and Friendship Heights. I think the Pentagon elevator will, is it?
Is back in service? Later?
Yes. The back in service as we speak. Next slide is Metro Access Service. For the month of February, Access Service, which we all know has ridership increases in the past couple of months, is still maintaining a 93.4% on-time performance. And delivered within the 60-minute window, I know we had some discussion at the last committee meeting. Point that Mr. Benjamin raised is still 98.9%, and as well, we're working on that, Mr. Benjamin, to correct those parameters as we speak, too. That ends the presentation on operation performance. If there's any questions, I'll let that answer from the committee.
Questions? Okay, I'll start. Let's no particular order. Start with that last one on Metro Access. You alluded to the on-time performance window. You talked about the 30 to 60 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems to be a fairly useless statistic.
I would like to have Mr. Kenneth done some evaluation, Mr. Zimmerman. I can have him kind of just share with the committee what he came up with so far.
The problem with this seems to me is if we're making it, it doesn't, you know, we could be within that and have horrible service. On the other hand, we might have good service and not know it. I mean, what do we know when we're saying we're measuring something with that kind of window?
Mr. Zimmerman, the last couple of times that we looked at the two graphs, that second graph I think was a little misleading, so I'd like to offer this as an alternative way to look at on-time performance. If you look at the pie chart on the left side, when we say that the service is 93.4% on time overall, that is within the 30-minute window that all customers are given when they make reservations.
When you say 30, you mean plus or minus?
Well, that's how it has been expressed in the past. Now what we're really telling the customer is to please be ready for boarding between 9 and 9:30. That's the window. We used to say your pickup time is 9:15, be ready 15 minutes before and after, but it's basically the same thing. So the idea was to emphasize that there is a legitimate 30-minute window that we can arrive.
Well, okay, so that's not 30, 60, that's a 15-minute. That's a 30-minute window, basically, plus or minus 15.
Yes, but the way we're quoting it to the customer is not that way. We're trying to simplify it and say that once we've established what their appointment time is, where they need to be, we say, please be ready for boarding between these two times, this 30-minute window. So every time we give you a percentage of on-time performance, it's referring to all those trips that were delivered within the 30-minute window that was quoted to the customer. So the second graph that we presented in the operational performance report was we expressed it as a 60-minute window, which I think really was misleading. So I'm going to try this a better way. That 6.6% late piece of the pie on the left side consists of what is blown up on the pie on the right side, which is that those are all the trips that were not delivered within the 30-minute pickup window for the customer. So once we've passed that 30 minutes, then out of all the trips that were late or missed, that the little piece of the pie, the yellow one, the 1.1%, represents those late trips that were 30 minutes more beyond the end of the 30-minute pickup window. So it's essentially 60 minutes from the beginning of that of the pickup window. And so again, that the overall message here is that when we are late, that the number of trips that are very late, that are 30 minutes or more beyond that quoted window, is only 1.1% of the total ridership. And in February, at the very bottom, that indicates 1,583 trips out of 148,000 trips that were provided to registered customers.
That pickup or delivery?
That's pickup. On-time performance is measured by pickup.
The chart says delivery.
Yeah,
well, completed. Yeah, that's. I'm getting in trouble with semantics, but it means that it means trips completed.
The use of the language.
Indeed.
If I were to go to transit boards in other cities that run fire transit service and see a presentation there, would I see the same statistical concept, the same construct you have here in the way you measure it? Is it industry standard kind of thing?
We're more precise. We're actually more precise. The chart on the left you'd see everywhere else. The way they arrive at those percentages, though, are very different. I mean, we have some systems that are as broad as only reporting lateness when a customer complaint comes in. In our case, every late trip is registered through GPS technology. We're much more precise.
What I'm really talking about, though, is the definition of on time.
Yes. It's by the pickup in most places in the country.
And it's a 30-minute standard?
The window varies, but this is a common one. A 30-minute window is very common. Some are 20 minutes, some are 15, but you know they're expressed differently, but this is definitely very common.
Ms. Benjamin.
Could we then relabel this chart and redo this chart so that it is pickup, not trips delivered, because that's what you're telling us, that's all you're really measuring?
Right, well,
pickup within the 30-minute window that we provide for the passenger. If it's beyond the 30-minute window, it's late.
Right.
If it's within the 30-minute window, that's what we're getting.
That's
at least
right.
Then we understand what we're getting. And we have no measure of how often somebody arrives at their destination
substantially later than when they intended to?
We actually do measure that, but it is not as common for customers to book trips that way. They have the option when they call to say, pick me up at this time, or I need to be at my appointment at this time. But what we found is that we offer that to the customers as an option to say, if you're concerned about an on-time arrival to the destination, tell us when you need to be there. But then what customers often do is that when we assign them the pickup time, if they think that the assigned pickup is too early, then they become more concerned about the pickup time. It's very much, because it is a shared ride system, it's very much like a super shuttle type situation where once you indicate where you need to be and when, you're provided a window. And so the customer has a choice between really which parameter is most important, the on-time arrival at the destination or when they'd like to leave their origin.
And to what degree do we get complaints about pickups that are within the 30-minute window but deliveries that are well beyond the expected time?
Well, out of all the complaints that we receive, I mean, the late complaint is the most prevalent that we get in the service.
The late arrival.
Late pickup.
Yeah.
But within lateness overall, it's a much smaller percentage about late arrival to the destination, but we do get those.
I think we originally had what I think I'm asking for again. Wasn't that the way it was originally reported, was the 15 minutes on either side of the nominal 30-minute window, and were we within that window or not within that window?
Well, we stopped talking about plus or minus 15 because
okay. 30-minute window. Fine.
Yeah, because unfortunately, what would happen is that customers would start measuring lateness from the middle of the window instead of the beginning. So we wanted
at least
to get away
for me,
from
I
that.
Think it would make more sense to do a measurement of whether or not we did pick up within the 30-minute window that we said we would. And we label this to show very clearly that we're talking about pickups, not deliveries.
We can do yes. that.
But I don't know where the rest of the committee is.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay.
Yeah, in the appendix on page 18, where we give the Rex bus line statistics. I'm just wondering if would it be possible to show us a chart that includes the on-time performance during rush times versus off-peak times? Because I guess my concern is when I'm looking at this, overall it might be 68% in February, but I see at least during rush hour a lot of bumper-to-bumper buses, and so I'm having a hard time believing that in rush hour that may be the statistic. And if it is worse during rush, something we need to know as we look at the infrastructure out there to see if during rush times we have an infrastructure problem that we can avoid.
I can do that. I can have it broken down to the 8 a.m., p.m. peak midday service.
Okay. I think that would be good to see because I think that might help us identify if we have an infrastructure problem out there during rush hour that might be the cause more than something else. Okay. So, thank you.
On the rail on-time performance, you kind of lost over a little bit, but fair to say we are having consistently higher performance than we did last year?
I'm sorry, Mr. Timmer.
Is it fair to say that our rail performance is consistently higher than last year?
Yes.
For every month starting in July?
Yes.
And we've stayed above 93% overall for the entire fiscal year and have been rising since November. I obviously don't want to question success, but we ask why when things are going wrong. So what's going right here?
I think one of the big issues is the fact that starts from the inside out, as I said. What we're doing now is we're really looking at every trip, how it comes out, and we're managing every trip. And then when we've gotten better at when there's service interruptions that happen on the system, we've gotten better in how to handle and manage those as well. But the constant conversations between the operators and the supervisors as to focusing on what the headway is, I think at times if some of you have ridden the train, you even hear the operators make the announcements that they're holding at a station for schedule adjustments because they're more cognizant of the schedules that are out there now. So I think that our supervisor involvement has really helped out with getting with the operators and.
So you think operational changes is accounting for?
Yes, I do.
The change calls, okay. On the bus side, to go to that, we've talked in previous meetings about the limitations of the way we, you know, report and look at this data. The on-time standard being so different for bus than it is for rail, and the difference in interpreting it because we don't control the right-of-way. And I know you were looking at that. How's that coming in terms of finding other ways to analyze this?
Similar to what Mr. McCage has asked us is that what we're taking a look at, we've broken it down in, I call it four areas, AM, PM, peak period, midday, and late night. And sometimes it's hard to take on the whole elephant at one time, so we're kind of breaking that down a little bit into the early and late stages, too. You know, most of our buses are out during peak hours, over 1,200 buses, and then about 800 during the off-peak. But we start looking at the earlies, we start looking at the lates. We start polling our buses down at the dispatch center to see how many are running early, and the dispatchers are taking a more proactive measure and calling the buses and telling them about keeping on time, on schedule, and the supervisors getting involved in it, too. I'm going to come back to the committee and kind of walk you through the stages of this with the bus reorganization, how that's fitting in with the systems integration part with the bus dispatch center to see how it all comes together to work toward working on the all-time performance. And I know there's been some talk at times about bus bunching and different things that are happening, and show some of the solutions that we've came up with to try and address those issues. But all that is geared toward making sure that we're providing the service that on the street, and more importantly, that the customers expect. I think there's been some comments made sometime. The customer expects the bus to be there at 9 o'clock. They expect it to be there at 9 o'clock, you know, not 8:59, 8:58. And one of the things that customers do not like to do at times is to wait on the buses when they come up too. So that's some of the things that we're evaluating. And again, as I said, it starts from our dispatch center and works its way out because they have a bigger picture of the whole system.
That's it's one of the consequences of weak bus service, that if you're going to have to wait a long time, then it really is a big deal to miss it. But if you're telling the customer, well, you're going to have to plan on being there even earlier, that's like adding headway time to the bus, right? I mean, it's like even more time now that I got to wait, because I've got to be there 5 or 10 minutes early every day for a bus. It isn't necessarily coming then. It might be, you know, 20 minutes later or something like that. Now you're making it really convenient. It seems to me that there's at least three different things that we need to focus on related to bus performance. The first is those things that are operational, that if you look at them, you say, you know, the problem is something in the way, you know, what the bus operators are doing or something that is in our day-to-day operations. And that's the thing that's most in your control. And you want to know what those are and identify those, because those are the things you can fix and, you know, can be most responsible for. Secondly, there's things that are related to the structure of the route. When we look at them and we say, you know, this route's been the same way it's been since, you know, 1973 or 1923. It's amazing to me, huh? They can stay around forever, even though there are all kinds of changes around them. And the route doesn't make sense anymore, actually. And it would function a whole lot better if we made certain kind of changes to it. When we do get around to looking at those things, we often find those kind of changes made. And the third has to do with the operation of the street environment, which you have the least direct control over, but somebody does have some sort of control over it. And, you know, that has to do with things like signals that other people control and other kind of traffic issues. So our responses aren't all the same. I mean, one is a short-term immediate response. The second case is something ultimately within our control, but it's a more of a long-term planning kind of thing. And the third is a much bigger deal where we have to engage other agencies. Now, that may be comprehensive. This is just my analysis. You know, you guys might think of something else. But somehow the data we get, the analysis we get, the performance measures have to relate to those things. We have to be able to figure out, you know, we got five bus routes that are performing badly, let's say, but they may be performing badly for different reasons. One of them may have been doing just fine, and now it's doing, you know, not doing well, and you got to say, is that because the people working on it are doing something different, or something different happened on that route? And, you know, which are the ones we can fix right away, and which are the ones we have to work on? What's been lacking, I think, here and everywhere else, is the idea of continuous improvement. With the rail system, we're trying to find ways to keep it on time. With the bus system, for the most part, bus service is just like, it is what it is, and, you know, it's,
right.
You know, you throw a few of our buses out there to make them come a little more frequently occasionally. But nobody's really, you know, worked on a continuous basis to try and say, how do we get buses anything like a standard remotely, like what people demand every day on the rail? Mr. Albert.
Yeah, I asked a couple of questions. So you provide data on a system-wide basis, but for some of us who actually ride bus more than rail, we're more interested in data that relates to a particular bus line. For example, how does the public know how late a specific bus line or lines are running, and how is that information made available to the public?
Yeah, how do we get the information out to the public?
Right. How do you
bus line
it?
Is,
right.
But right now, one of the methods would be to communicate it through the from the bus dispatch center to the bus operators, and then try to get it out from a supervisory standpoint to let our customers know that the buses are running late. Probably from would imagine from the terminal standpoint, we can contact down the line and let them know that way. But it's
so
not.
But does Metro actually collect that information at that level? Like the S9 or the S2 or the S4, over a period of time, are you collecting data on the kind of late trends on those specific lines, and how is that communicated to the general public?
And we're collecting data on all the lines as you speak, like S9, S4, and if we're trying to do it on a day-to-day basis to communicate to the customer, the only means we may have is through our supervisory standpoint, supervisors.
As we move forward into the future, actually this July, and I won't come back to work if it's not done by July. I would go out with the signs myself. It's the next bus information system, and that will be in at certain locations, and the abilities for our customers to call in or use the PDAs or other hand devices or computers will provide that real-time time information similar to the PIDs in the rail system. Today, the only communications we really have is on the internet site when we know in advance there are going to be delays or disruptions. With the next bus information, that will provide real-time information. So today, you're right. There is no effective way to communicate hourly or every half an hour if the bus is going to be late, but we are implementing technology or reintroducing the technology this July that will provide that information.
And is that information meant to replace the timetables you find at the bus stop, which isn't updated?
No, it is
any
not
real frequency. So I walk out and I expect the 804 bus, which comes at 8:15, and I suppose you actually record that as on time. What's the effort made to actually update those timetables for those of us who don't have a handheld device that could download the schedule information but have to actually walk to the bus stop to get it?
The problem is, they're updated every service change a couple twice a year, but the reality is, in a five-day week, you could have five different times that the vehicle might arrive depending upon traffic conditions. For example, if a, not picking on UPS, but if a UPS truck parks on K Street, it's going to disrupt the bus service, and it's going to cause a delay. The next day, that might not occur, and so you have a different time. On the third day, you have other issues, some accident that will impact it on a specific route.
Well, I was actually talking about sort of infrastructure changes that might affect over a longer period of time. So there's construction on, I don't know, pick a route, 16th Street, 14th Street, 8th Street.
Thank you.
So do you adjust the schedules at the bus stops? You know it's going to be a 2 or 3 year construction schedule. Are you adjusting schedules on a real-time basis to factor in all the hindrances along the road?
Yes, we do add additional services, but even then, it's difficult to control that. But the real answer...
I wasn't asking about the services. I know you add additional services. I was talking about the schedule.
I need to check specifically on that route, but what we should be doing is adjusting the services if we know there's going to be long-term construction. the real answer and what would really help this are dedicated bus lanes or priority lanes during the peak periods. That way you have
fewer interruptions. That's the next
to me. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm an operationalist to me.
Right. Thank you.
A bus I was on this morning got stopped because a car apparently decided to run out of gas right before the bus stop. And it got stuck there waiting for the car to move. Too close, couldn't move one way or the other. So those things are unpredictable. But I think Mr. Roberts is talking about the kind of things where, you know, again, other agencies which run the roads know they're going to tear up this street for some period of time. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you, you know, if it's a one-month thing, you're not necessarily going to change the schedule and go running around, you know, the new printed schedule maybe, but if it's going to be an 18-month project, do we know we're getting that plugged in? I think that's a good thing to look into.
Yes.
Closely related to this, too, one of the issues with the first part I was talking about with the managing the service question had to do with street supervisors and their authority. And as you reported to the board, Mr. Cato, sometime last year, I guess, you found that we had these street supervisors, but they didn't have the authority to do the things they needed to do.
That's an understatement. They had no authority to do what they needed to do.
And you were going to change that.
That has changed. In fact, that's the presentation that Mr. Francis is going to make to this committee at its next meeting, the specifics. And I even recommend, and we will have one of the new service managers participate in the presentation and talk about it from their perspective of how it's changing, what has changed, not just from, you know, my level of getting a report in the office, but from the individuals who actually are doing the job. This has required training, new ways of doing things. This is a complete change from the way we've handled managing the services on the street.
I'm very interested in hearing about that and also seeing how you can measure its impact, which relates to the discussion on rail, where I think you have a pretty good idea of what you're doing and what the connection is. This is in the May meeting you're planning to do?
Next meeting, yes.
Okay. Other questions on operations? One thing that has not been included in this that I'm sorry to see, but we could have for some time now had report as part of performance reports from our history writer program. We have a couple of quarters of results already, and it seems to me this relates directly to the things we're talking about. The quarterly data gives you the opportunity to look and see how things are going with, you know, over time. And, some of the results of that, although they've never been presented to the board, it seems to suggest some areas of inquiry. There are areas in which the scores come up very high, and that's notable, and that is, frankly, most of them. But there are some areas in which they come out not so notably high, and those things I think you would want to look into, which, of course, was the reason for having the program in the first place. You know, for instance, things like rail mezzanine and rail platform, notably dip under 90%, bus stop down to 77%, and sales clerk, 63%. Now, you know, again, the whole point of doing this kind of work was to get some indicator of things that need to be looked into and areas where there might be need for improvement. At least it gives you a systematic way of examining certain aspects of service, checking it over time, and maybe identifying specific problems. This is just data, but one of the advantages of a program like this is you can locate trouble spots that might not just be, you know, you might have 90-something percent, it's basically okay, but you got one real problem spot, and the report will show that, and it might never come out at this level, but operationally you'll see it, you'll have made some kind of change. I think you know what I'm talking about, but maybe that's happened and I don't know about it, but we haven't.
We need to be brief. We have to brief the board on this and talk about
it. And it hasn't been integrated into the ongoing evaluation of performance, which I thought was the purpose.
We're on the schedule for next month to give you that briefing for the status of the program, what the data is showing us to this point, and to get policy direction from the board about how we're going to be moving forward with this.
Oh, and the integration part, you're absolutely right. We will include that as part of it.
Other questions? All right, let's go on to the next item. We have a couple of action items. First one, the Hilton Ball artwork. First one for the Dulles extension, the second one for the Target North Station. How you want to handle this, Mr. Cato?
Actually, Michael McBride will be making the presentation to you.
Good morning, Mr. McBride. Good to see you again.
Good morning. It's good to see you as well. It's been a while.
What you got for us?
Okay. We can proceed, please. The purpose of our presentation today is to obtain the board's acceptance of the five art proposals for the Dulles Corridor Metro Rail project, and those proposals are being recommended by the Art Review Committee. And we hope that will lead to the board's approval to authorize the general manager to enter into contracts with the selected artist. Next slide. Bit of background. Policy dictates that we obtain board's approval for artwork to be installed in the system. The cooperative agreement between Metro and the Airports Authority contains funds for the five artwork for the five future stations. Art in Transit, in cooperation with the Airports Authority, conducted a competition, and we received 167 portfolios from artists from around the world, in fact. We pulled together a panel, which was comprised of course, Metro, the Airports Authority, and Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation. And we had several representatives from the Fairfax County arts community, including representatives from the Fairfax Arts Council. We were very fortunate to have Robert E. Simon on the panel. He's a wonderful guy who actually founded Reston. The panel also included the executive director of the Arts Council, a local artist, Tim Davis, wonderful artist and arts educator, and Elizabeth Lodell, who was the former principal of Langston High School and is also a very serious art collector. We had a wonderful closeout session at her home, and she shared her collection with us. It was a great experience for everyone. Next slide. In terms of benefits and cost associated with the project, if we integrate the artwork at this early stage of development, we strongly believe that it will help create more attractive facilities, and it creates a sense of pride when you do that, pride in Metro and a pride in the communities that surround the stations. Also, we are strong believers that art helps build by creating wonderful places to help build livable communities. And generally, the art that we've selected throughout the program reflects the artistic, cultural, and historic interest of the surrounding neighborhoods. Also, it's important to note that the artwork does create opportunities, professional opportunities for artists and other ancillary or related ancillary professions. And I might note here that the project is fully funded by the Airports Authority. Next slide, please. In terms of how we'll present this, we'll give you the location first. We'll show you some of the artwork that the artist has done, some of his or her previous commissions, and then we'll tell you a little bit about the proposal. This is Martin Dunland. These are three pieces of his previous work. He works in glass. We selected artists to work in glass because obviously there's a lot of glass in the new stations. Very colorful, very bright, very bold. Next slide, please. This is what Martin is proposing. We are also proposing that Martin work with the Poet Laureate of Virginia to incorporate some written pieces into his artwork. He's using glass. As you can see, it's a two-story panel. The model is there. Do you want to find sort of stuff?
Mr. McBride, maybe this is a lame question. I'm trying to envision exactly where this, I couldn't tell from the printed one, but maybe on the screen I'll be able to see kind of where it is. Because
okay, if you go back to, okay.
Is the two slides back?
Yes.
Back to?
It's at the head of the station configuration. So when you come in from the first or second floor, again, you would see this two-story series of panels. We also thought that we would have him, through by doing some very serious cost engineering, we felt that we could install some smaller pieces at other areas in the plaza.
So if I'm coming over on that bridge,
yes,
Sergeant, you probably know this.
Yeah, as I understand it, it's the station level as you're entering, is it not? Where
that's
you
correct.
Will, yes, yes, so that you would, right.
Right in
and
here.
Go there.
Because I'm coming to the station from below, right? That's the bridge over the highway?
Yes, that's over the highway.
The typical approach. How long is that, by the way? Or don't I want to ask? So, I'm sort of coming across, and that's what I'm going to see it.
Right.
Hopefully I'll notice that.
And you can
traffic.
See it on both.
Exactly. One of the features of all the artwork is that it's installed in the non-revenue area so that you can enjoy it from if you're a Metro passenger or if you're a pedestrian or even a traveler, vehicular it is. Okay. This is the location proposed for Central 123. As you can see, it'll be just along that wall there. Next slide, please. This is Ray King. Ray King works with the natural phenomenon of light and glazing. And he uses, next slide please. He is proposing an elliptical shape along the concrete walls at the station. This piece is roughly 27 feet by 50 feet, so it's basically the length of a house. There are 142 facet pieces of glass there. And because of its southern orientation, the sun will change the chromatics of the piece throughout the day because obviously the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The piece sets about a foot off the wall at its highest point. Central 7 station, these are the locations for the artwork on Central 7. Okay. This artist, David Dilquest, previous commissions, he works in laser jet cut metal and concrete generally. His pieces are internally lit, and we're proposing a series of iconic pieces for this station as well. If you can note the photo here, because I'm going to reference it in the next slide. Next slide, please. This is what Mr. Dilquest is proposing, and we would like to collaborate with an eight Virginia-based literary artist to incorporate literary pieces in the base of these series of columns. I must note here, though, that we are not pleased with the weight of the columns. We feel that the configuration could be a little bit more refined, so we've asked the artist to go back in and refine the bases themselves. He uses, if you can go back, please. He uses, this is where the poems by the Virginia literary artists will be incorporated. And the piece, again, is laser jet on the top, and there will be a polycarbonate lens to protect and reflect the light.
So what did you have in mind for
this? Something simple. We're not there yet. But it should be more refined, and again, it should speak to the general geometry of the station. Right now, they look a little too heavy for us. Yeah. Next slide, please. And again, please note that there's a series of eight, four parallel to the roadway and four perpendicular to the roadway. And as you can see, the night vision, there was a desire within the panel to have artwork that is not only functional in the day, but can be visible at night as well.
Let me stop you there for a second, though.
Yes, sir.
How does it affect the action we're being asked to take here today if you're saying we're not there yet on something you're showing us?
Well, there are, these artists have made two revisions for us, and you don't go into the third round until you've actually contracted with the artist. It does not affect it financially. It does not affect the overall concept at all. We're looking for design refinements.
So basically, you're making a recommendation that we give contracts to these particular artists with the concept that we're shown,
yes,
with the idea that they're not done until you at the staff level.
Yes, until the refinements, and until we're satisfied.
And
with
we
the
in this case is you.
And the panel.
You and the panel that works with it will make the final okay, and basically that's when they get paid.
Yes, but there will be no serious departure from what you're seeing today. Again, just refinements.
All right.
Next slide, please. This is Tysons West. As you can see, the proposed area is here. Next slide. This artist is Barbara Gagudas. She's done a huge amount of work around the world. Her pieces are steel, and the final finished surfaces are aluminum. This is a very dramatic piece. We were totally floored by this. We didn't expect to receive something like this, but we liked it. The panel liked it. It's about 40 feet high, so you can see that it's absolutely huge, but it complements the adjacent structure. Again, it's internally lit. All the mechanicals are in the base here. The top here, as you see, this is one of those things, Mr. Zimmerman, that will be refined. We are very concerned about nesting, and so we're going to cap that with a solid cap, and there will be no planes, flat planes on the sculpture at all.
Mike Brown, can you go back again?
Sure.
And if you go to the bottom left.
Yes.
And describe how that placement contributes in terms of the area that the plaza is it ground from the question or the discussion that we had, is that the asset of having the more active plaza or involvement of the art and the activity around the art versus the others? It's a little less.
Sure. This piece here is particularly special because it helps create a place. One of the things that the panel wants to do here in terms of design refinements is they want to install several sort of low seating places, if you will. They also want to off-center the piece a bit. So it creates a bit of a destination and a place that people can contemplate and enjoy the site and the artwork.
All I can tell from this is there's a highway on one side. What's on the other side, like behind where those trees are?
That's an area of building that I'm not quite sure what the final configuration will be.
It's in the design. Right. It's part of the Tysons development.
Does that mean there's going to be a building there?
It will probably be the connecting part of that if it's the area I'm looking at. It becomes the connecting part, the station area. The private.
Yeah, because your question, I think, would be driven a lot by what happens on that.
And that is the Tysons, that in this particular case, that is the Tysons development piece that's taking place. And connecting the transit-oriented development that must connect to the station area design in order to fulfill.
Yeah.
We, I think, in both metro as well as in the county.
Because whether this is active, you know, whether there actually are people walking around, that depends on what's
exactly
there.
Right.
The highway on one side isn't going to help there, so yeah, we'll have to be lively on the other side. All right.
Next slide, please. And this is the material. You can see it's very lightweight. It's perforated metal. It won't cause an issue with wind loads.
These are the proposed colors. The one color that will not appear in this series is the green. We're staying away from all traffic-related colors. That is art. That is yellow, red, and green. These
kind of leaves you with blues.
Yeah, blues to purples. The lights will change gradually. It'll start out with the light blue and it'll end up another color. So it won't change like from one color to the other. It'll be a very gradual transition. Okay, Willie Avenue. And these are the two areas being proposed for Willie Avenue. And that is where the pedestrian bridge interfaces with the canopies at the station. Next slide, please. This artist is David Wilson. He does remarkable stained glass pieces. And again, he has work around the world. And he's quite an accomplished stained glass artist. Next slide, please. David is proposing that, again, we use the glazing to install the artwork. And this is a sample of what the glazing might look like. It's a dichrome glass. And as you can see, there's several methods here. There's stone, and there is airbrushes.
together and see if you can hear where you are, but again, the color will reflect on the station floor, so the artwork itself will animate the space.
But now see if you can see it.
Oh, yeah, well, there you go.
Very good.
And we'll do the same thing in the station. And the lighting is so subtle so that there will not be any issue with safety or anything like that. I might also add that all of the pieces have had a preliminary review for our constructability and safety. All of the artwork will be stamped by a Virginia-based engineer as well.
Is that the last piece?
That's the last piece.
Questions?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I started by putting the motion on the table to recommend approval and authorize the general manager to enter the contract.
Yes, that's the motion approval.
Second.
Ms. Hewlett seconds. Mr. McKay, is that? Yeah. I heard Mr. McKay.
I'm Mr. McKay.
Did you want to?
Well, I just wanted to first of all emphasize the involvement of the panel and the importance of artwork in terms of these station designs. Know that in looking at the extension, all of us have great concerns that this becomes, and I'll start at the wheelie moving back toward Tyson's, that there's a real complementary design of the stations and the development around it of the community that's there. And in that particular case of the panel, you had Robert Simon participating, and the community actually is in the midst of developing its own public arts initiative, part of a comp plan. So the station art and the associated art that can occur during the development around the station will be critical in dealing with, I think, what some of us find as the challenges of the station being in the center of a highway in most cases. And so what the panel has done has been exciting, I think, by all those of us that have had an opportunity to see it and continue, and that this is an action that starts a major process integrated with the development of the project for the long-term future. So that really is, and I think Metro's partnership here is very critical in that. I think it's also a good partnership because it's consistent with what we've seen in the station art of the current stations that we have, so it's going to be exciting bringing it to the community and seeing them engaged in this part of it. I don't have anything else or questions regarding this because I think the emphasis that is for Metro is that this is already included in the funding of the project, so it is the contract piece that we wish to see you carry in the process.
Thank you for the discussion.
Just to pick up on Ms. Hutchins' last comment, for the record, is there any way that any of the money that we would be spending on this artwork could be used to solve our operating budget problem or to alleviate any of the service cuts that have gone to public hearing?
The answer is no.
Because it's a separate construction project.
And it's funded, yes, it's funded jointly by the federal government and by the Commonwealth of Virginia. And the monies have been specifically allocated for the building of this extension and cannot be used for any other purpose.
Thank you.
For the discussion,
Mr. Benjamin. So, I just have one other question, and just following up on Mr. Benjamin. It's easier to find funds to build things, but to maintain and operate always becomes a challenge. So I just want to be clear as to whose responsibility would be after we've constructed these wonderful pieces of art to maintain them throughout this lifetime.
It is a responsibility. Once this system, this segment is built, it will be turned over to Metro for operations and maintenance. In the type of art that was selected, that was considered the amount of maintenance required and the ease of maintenance to ensure that we do not incur a large additional operating cost and operating out facilities. But ultimately, the answer to your question is Metro.
Do we have a sense as to what that operating cost would be?
All of the pieces use LEDs when there's lighting. And the cost of LEDs, I'm told by electrical people, is about $1.50 a day. In terms of the durability of the pieces, we're talking about an occasional power wash. And that would, I would assume, would be a part of the routine maintenance of our facilities.
So you're suggesting it's negligible?
Absolutely.
Okay. I guess we have history there. We actually have an existing station, specifically in the District of Maryland, which has quite a few nice pieces around there. I don't know if we're having any issues with maintenance with them. Perhaps they can vary by the nature of the work, but a lot of this stuff is you're cleaning off everything in the station.
Oh, coming from. Based upon what I've seen in other locations and understanding the amount of maintenance required, let's just say with the Metro designers and engineers and art community thought well and thought out the aspect of the maintenance cost, they did an exceptional job. It's little maintenance required.
Further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Next piece. Farragut North.
Sure. Next slide. I'll make this quick. It's pretty much the same, but obviously a different station. We're seeking board approval to accept the donation of artwork that is funded by the Golden Triangle Bid and the D.C. Commission on the Arts and Humanities. And we hope that with board approval, the general manager will be able to enter into a contract to accept the donated artwork. Next slide. Background, same again. We are required to bring such proposals to the board. This was done by way of a panel that involved representatives from the Golden Triangle, the Arts Commission, and of course Metro. And we went through the normal process to select the artwork, that is selecting a finalist and then making a recommendation to the board. Benefits are as they were with the Dulles project. I don't think I need to say them again, but the only difference here is that we've added inspired sense of community pride in the ownership of the station. Next slide. This piece is by Jeffrey Manuel. He's proposing to use something called Sensitile. If you're familiar with this particular station, it can be a little dim. And the Golden Triangle and the Arts Commission sought to enliven the station, and so we're using topo lines and sensitile, and they represent that basic geometry represents the Mississippi River, which is one of the significant places that Admiral Farragut sort of staged events to win the Civil War, if you will. I'm trying not to get too political here. The isometric, as you can see, it's on the east wall of the station. We wanted to honor the granite, so we told the artists that they absolutely cannot cover the walls entirely, so we just have components that sit on the granite. Can I just show the sample?
This is center tile. This material here acts to the environment. The LEDs, which were attached to the adjacent columns, the LEDs have been very low focus light. And it's
again, we'll just keep going. Again, just giving you a sense of the movement that the piece will create from the lower level.
The lines we see,
those are the tope lines.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we recommend that the board accept the artwork and approve allow the general manager to enter into an agreement to, again, accept and maintain the artwork. And I'd like to sort of, if I may, give a very special thank you to the Golden Triangle bid. Leona Agaritis authored a wonderful...
Leona Agaritis, familiar to everybody here.
Thank you,
Leona. For many years in this agency.
Right. See you again. And she crafted a wonderful proposal that went to the Arts Commission that allowed them to get 50% of the project funded by the Arts Commission, and again, the other 50% will be funded by the Golden Triangle bid.
Like a good partnership to me.
Yes.
Discussion. Questions. Mr. Albert, is there something you want to say?
I move that we adopt the recommendation of the staff.
I'll be happy to second it. Discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Say thank you to Michael and the work he's done with the panels on both of them. It's really exciting.
What she said.
Thank you.
Very good job.
And all those who have been working on it who aren't here today, but who have helped you and continue to help you and finalize it. All right. We have a safety item before we're done here.
Yep.
Sorry. You're welcome. Take it away.
All right. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Today we'll start with the rail safety performance indicators. As shown on the chart, this is the culminating of all fiscal years from February FY08 to FY09. We've had the number of rail passenger injury rates decrease by 51%. So that shows a positive downward turn. Specifically for the month of February this year versus last year, there was a 67% reduction for the number of the passenger injury rate. There was a 60% decrease as well. For escalator injuries, it was a 53% reduction. And we had, as shown on the chart, one mainline derailment, which is currently under investigation, and we'll notify you as more information becomes available. Thanks. So we move on to the number for bus safety performance indicators. For February this year versus last year, there was an 80% decrease, difference between the 15 and the 3. Preventable bus collision rate was decreased by 52%, non-preventable by 39%. The actual bus passenger injury rate was decreased by 82%. And lastly, for Metro Access, we've shown a negative for fiscal year FY08 to fiscal year FY09 from July through February, a 17% reduction. The actual Metro collision injury rate for February 09 versus FY09, a 47% reduction. So as you can see, all of our trends are just continuing to trend downward thanks to the good work of our folks in operation.
Mr. Cato, I misreading this or reading too much into it, or was the lead buried here?
Excuse me, the lead?
I mean, I'm reading this, and it looks to me like you had a negative 42 on rail safety, a drop in injuries. It looks huge. You look on the bus, I mean, these are like big numbers. Like
they are, and I, again,
what I think it means?
It means that our safety program is having an impact, a tremendous impact.
Certainly hope that's what it means. Yeah. This looks like a pretty dramatic improvement.
Yes. We still have a way to go in injuries. You know, our goal is not to have any, but obviously when you have this many people, things happen. But I think our safety department working with operations training and retraining and communications has had an impact. Some of which, I don't like to talk about publicly, but you recall 2 years ago where we were as an agency, and knocking on wood because I'm nervous about talking about things and they happen, our operators have responded. The operators have listened, and a lot of this is the result of the staff, but also the operators serving as mentors to other operators and then helping to improve their driving techniques, what happens at work, what happens in our rail operations. Again, we will get to a point that you won't see the dramatic drops, because there is a point of that you won't be able to get beyond, but in the last 2 years, there's been a significant change in the safety record of this agency.
Well, that's certainly what it looks like. As you said, 2 years ago was a particularly bad year. Now, there's always going to be some random element to that. Some years, things you can't control are going to happen. So some years will be worse than others. But, you know, the real question was, do we have a systematic problem? And that's what everybody was asking pretty much when you came in. I believe we had a pretty good improvement from last year to the previous year.
Yes.
So, unfortunately, we can't see that here. I don't know if you have comparable data for that.
We do.
Yes, we do.
You know, on a 2 year, it'd be interesting to see this change on a 2 year basis.
Sure.
Because, you know, you obviously put, you know, we put a lot of pressure on you to do something different on safety. You said you were going to, and you've done a different number of practices. This seems to be real indication that the performance is responding to what you've been doing. And, you know, again, if this isn't just some kind of fluke, it looks, I mean,
it's not a fluke.
This seems like a lot of data to suggest that across the board in all three areas of service, we've seen pretty dramatic improvement. I don't, am I overstating things?
I don't think you're overstating it. If we can, the numbers say what they say, that's a fact of it. And I think the point that really what we can take out of this is that frequently what we hear is the information about an incident that is a difficult incident.
Yes.
And then we need to put it in the perspective of the overall system and the overall operation of the system. And when you look at the numbers, you show that from an everyday experience, it's a very good, safe system. Yet there are times when we have something that we would rather not happen, but in a large system and the kind of numbers of people and the amount of operation that we have, it's a tremendous response to the changes that have occurred over the
years. Yes, and
part of them getting it out.
We will continue to focus on this, and the emphasis also will be the focus from a risk management standpoint. We've hired a new risk manager who will focus on the next element of this, and those are to ensure that our employees who do have an injury are taken care of, but also to really work through the program of getting them to return to work, to reduce not just the number of injuries, but the cost of our injuries. And that's really a focus that's going hand in hand with safety. And you will begin, it's going to take a few months, but you will begin to see those numbers make dramatic drops also. And the number of days that people are out by having light duty program, following up, talking to the employees to ensure that they know that we care and that we need them back here, we need them back at work. So this is one component of a bigger and larger overall strategy for the agency.
Well, I was pleased to see this, and I did think it was a fairly low-key presentation of pretty good results. I will say, again, to go back to the previous discussion, one of the things that jumped out at me in the second quarter results from the Mr. Wright program, one of the lowest numbers on the rail mezzanine report card was safety, which was only 73%. And, you know, again, to me, that's a question of, okay, you know, look behind that number, what was going on there, what does that specifically relate to, how does it relate to anything, a little bit different things here. But it is the kind of thing that I'd like you to be, you know, take a look at so that you can figure out what that means specifically, whether it's something that needs to be addressed, it's a, you know, fluke, it's just a quarterly blip, or it relates to some particular, very specific thing, as opposed to these broader measures of performance. All right, obviously, looking pretty good. Questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe that concludes the business of this agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I have one more thing. I'd like to invite all the committee and really everybody in here. We have our new look Metro Access van that's parked out in front.
We can go check it out.
Yes, sir.
If we got a break here. I will say I think we spent a lot of time today on operational issues and some on safety issues. I am looking to have us spend a little more time on the first part of our name, customer service, and I'm hoping that in the next few months we'll be able to devote some time to customer service and quality assurance. I think we touched on a little bit that wasn't there. With that, we're going to go right into your opinion, Sean, I believe.
Sure.
So you want to commence right away?
Sure.
And I'll adjourn and hand it over to you.
Can you hit once again?
Okay.
Great. So we're